rest of it, and it kicked us both out somehow.
It says Mashadar was hungry.
Mashadar was hungry. Who is Mashadar?
Is that weird shadow thingy in Shadar Logoth?
Gotcha,
and in
gotcha,
the
gotcha.
Second episode, it eats a horse because, you know,
yeah,
hungry enough to eat a horse.
You got to remember
it's the
that
expression. And it's funny because
it's
Mashadar
funny.
Ate a horse.
It's very
and
funny.
And it ties into the expression of I'm so hungry that I could eat a horse.
You and your explained jokes.
Do you get it?
I'm going to drive up to freaking Kansas City and stab you. You got to remember, as I've tried to explain to Jacob multiple times, who might be a guest in a future episode, by the way, listeners, that I have only listened to the audiobooks of this whole series, so I don't know how anything is spelled, and I'm just going by their pronunciations of things. So it's really bothering me in the show when they pronounce things slightly different. Okay, so after that lovely introduction, we started having a bunch of weird technical issues, and Steven's audio cut out for about 10 minutes, so he missed his entire description of the opening of the episode, and we get all up to the moment with the fairy. So I'm going to try to cover everything after the fact, because it's now Christmas week, and we ran into a lot of trouble recording everything. But first, I wanted to put in a disclaimer, not a disclaimer really, a correction. In previous week's episode, we talked a lot about how the opening scene was text on screen and very unmemorable. That was a lie. It was in fact so unmemorable because it wasn't even text on screen. It was actually Rosamund Pike as Moraine Aes Sedai getting dressed and looking at a map and wrapping up a little statue of a lady that will probably be important later, and saying all of those things that we thought were text on screen. So that's how boring the opening scene of the actual first episode was. It was completely it was so dumb that we thought it was text on screen. So now that correction's out of the way and we've heard Steven's fun name for this episode, let me go over the first few minutes of episode two, and then we will get into the real episode with Steven in it. Just FYI, if you are just tuning in and didn't hear last times, we are giving you a spoiler warning now for the show and the books and possibly future seasons of the show because we've read more of the books. So if you don't want anything spoiled, today we're going over specifically episodes 2 and 3, A Shadow's Waiting and A Place of Safety, and we might have spoilers for future episodes in this recording as well. So, this episode opens out better than anything else so far, with the White Cloak encampment torturing an Aes Sedai and burning her alive, and it's revealed that he has killed a bunch of Aes Sedai, and then all the villagers run away with Moraine. They cross a river, and then a bunch of Trollocs show up, and the ferryman jumps into the river to go save his ferry that's already sinking. Stephen will go into depth here about why that was the dumbest idea of all. Again, apologies that this is a short episode because we lost a bit of the recording, but as a bonus, somebody will show up at the end for a guest point of view on the episode. And we'll see you next week where we have a totally guest host to talk about episode 4. And Merry Christmas.
This is the book report. Hi.
Okay, well, we are back after some bizarre technical difficulties in the middle of Steven's rant about stupid ferrymen. So
dumb.
Start that over again. I said it was way too Lord of the Rings. You said he was way too stupid, and then everything went to hell.
That sounds about right. Just like the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I was saying, what type of rational person looks across the river sees an entire army, basically of nightmarish undead creatures, and thinks, mm-hmm. I'll figure this out by the time I get over there. So he jumps into the river and starts swimming.
So dumb. It's just, yeah, very, very bizarre. He's like, that fairy is my whole life. We're like, yeah, but your life also your life.
It's gone, homie.
It's gone. What's your plan here?
It's gone. So stupid.
Yeah. So they kill Ferryman. Well, he kills himself. Stupid.
He kills himself. He committed suicide, but wasn't brave enough to say that's what he was doing.
Yeah, he committed suicide by a trollic. Or by water. I don't know. Anyways, they keep running.
Water trollic.
Yeah. Everybody has weird bad dreams. Then Moraine passes out because she can't heal herself because she got stabbed by a trollic.
Yes, stabbed by a trollic.
Yeah. And so she goes to sleep. And then the Trollocs find them again. And so Lan takes them into Nightmare Giant City after giving a whole cool history lesson, which is the only cool part of the episode, in my opinion. The history lesson that they did a good job or better job of explaining that Shadar Logoth and that city is the one that refused to help Manetherin back in the day. They didn't make that super clear in the books, so I did like that.
But that was useful, yeah.
Yeah. And that was the end of the episode. They all go inside. Oh, wait, no, that's not in the end of the episode,
isn't it? It's not. That's not the end of the episode. You were getting a little ahead of yourself. You were pulling a what we did with the beginning of episode one.
Yeah. They actually – so the whole – everything that happens in Shadar Logoth happens in this episode, doesn't it? That's a lot of stuff going on.
That's why I said this episode took what I think is one of the most interesting things and made it very boring because everything in Shadar Logoth is really interesting. A lot of cool stuff happens. It does go in a little bit into the mythology and stuff of Shadar Logoth a little bit. And you get this really weird city that's completely abandoned.
And it's actually really cool looking. It's the first like cool set piece in the show.
Well, if you only get to see it, this is also the first, like in the books, this is the first city any of these people have ever been to,
right.
Like the Two Rivers people. So this should be a really big deal to them.
The city, when they showed up in the city in the book, it felt like, it really felt like you played Breath of the Wild, didn't you?
Yeah.
Okay. The giant mazes. That exists.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the city felt like that, and it felt this ancient, mysterious, really intricate city that is just completely empty and terrifying. They did a really good job of that, and then nothing else good in the episode.
Yes. They even kind of like, I felt like they glossed over a little bit when Matt grabs the knife.
Yeah. Yeah.
They just went way too fast through it.
Wasn't their party a lot bigger when they made it to Shadar Logoth in the book?
In the book? I don't remember, to be honest.
Wasn't the Tinker guy with them?
Probably. I mean, I felt like there were more people who got...
Yeah. I think their party was bigger at that point.
But in the TV show, it's just a horse.
Yeah, just the horse gets eaten. So yeah, they go there. They go hide in the church. Then Matt sneaks off at night to go steal a knife that has a big ruby diamond in the hilt. Ruby diamond makes no sense, but a big ruby in the hilt. And then shadows attack them, eat the horse, and separate them all. And they all go out different sides of this giant city. And then Nynaeve shows up with a knife to Lan's throat, which makes no sense if you've read the books, but is awesome in the show.
I don't know. It was a weird plot point, and I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. Because you're right. She shouldn't be able to sneak up on him at all. And they're just they're trying to lean too much into the Nynaeve is a badass when they should be leaning into the no one likes Nynaeve because she's annoying and mean.
Yeah, she's a
they're going the wrong track with her.
Why in the world is Lan's cloak not making him invisible? This is pissing me off.
I know. You're supposed to like when you look at them, like your eyes are supposed to kind of shift away.
Yes.
Like slide over it. Yes. And that's a really cool thing in the books. Like, that's how a lot of times you can tell that there's a warder there because you can't really like look at them straight on. And in the books, it's just like, here's this vaguely ethnic dude who's handsome walking around with Moiraine all the time. Mm-hmm. All right. Cool.
And like a fake leather crown thing on that they kind of hint at what it's for. Yeah. I don't know. They I think the casting was well done. I think he plays the character well, but the costuming is stupid for him.
I don't mind it. I mind the everything they're doing with Nynaeve.
Gotcha. That's fair.
Bad character.
Yeah, I like Nynaeve too much in the show, and you're not supposed to like her yet.
No, you shouldn't like her. I don't think you should like her until like seven seasons in. But when they were doing, going back to the Shadar Logoth, that scene, so a lot of the books, if you've read the books, are very forgettable. They all kind of have the same formula. You start off, everything's like kind of okay, and then by the end, someone ends up fighting one of the like dark friends one way or another, and they all follow that format.
Forsaken or the Chosen.
Yeah, the Forsaken usually, or the Chosen or whatever. But this is one of the things that happens in the first book that is really unique, the whole Shadar Logoth scene or whatever. And it takes up a pretty good chunk of it. It affects all of them in different ways. And the fact that they blew through it and made it kind of boring is really sad to me, because I like, it's one of those things that even after reading all 230 books in the series, I still remember that scene pretty vividly from the books.
Exactly. It's a very interesting, terrifying concept that they play around with a little bit, but yeah, even five books in, they stop caring about it, even though it's one of the more interesting ideas he's come up with.
And I think for the movie or the TV show, they should have really leaned into making this episode almost a horror episode, which would have been really unique for a fantasy series to try to do, because that's what it is. Basically, there's a shadow, and if the shadow touches you, you're toast. What do you do with that?
It's consumed an entire gigantic, super defensible city from the inside out. Mm-hmm. It's terrifying. It's brilliant. It's so scary that the monsters won't go in there. And yet, you just kind of fast forward through it really quickly.
It was really campy when they did it. Really campy.
And then, yeah, that's the whole episode. All
right. But you're right, though. A lot of things in this episode felt really similar to the Lord of the Rings, the fairy scene. And then also them in Shadar Logoth felt very similar to when the Fellowship was in the Mines of Moria.
Mm-hmm. Just a giant, like, empty, elaborate city. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's nothing there, and then there's a force that's slowly trying to attack you, and you're just running away the whole time, and you get separated.
You can't fight. Yeah, it's very, very Lord of the Rings first movie.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to A Place of Safety, episode 3, which again starts off kind of strong, and then immediately goes haywire. Like, their cold opens, other than the first episode, have been pretty good. This opens going back and showing you how Nynaeve escaped, outsmarts, and even kills one of the Trollocs. But then...
also dumb.
Yeah. But then it jumps... It was kind of a cool action scene, but then it jumps into this stupid story. So they're all just walking. It's, again, Lord of the Rings. They're all just walking. Let's see.
No, it's not even that interesting. Ran and Matt are just hanging out in a city eventually for most of the episode. I thought this episode was better, which is interesting because it was also a very boring episode.
I think it ends strong, though.
It ends very strong, and I think that's why I remember it as an interesting episode.
Yeah. So they're all separated. They all go their separate ways. Egwene and Perrin. This is the first episode they really focus on the dreams. They talked about them last episode, but didn't really. But Perrin has a long dream about wolves and the burning eye guy. And then they run into the Tuatha'an, the traveling people, who tell them all about their way of the leaf and how we don't hurt anybody no matter what. And Egwene kind of gets the hots for one of them, and they just walk around for a while. And then Rand and Matt go to a little mining village, I guess. Mm-hmm. And they meet Tom Marilyn, which is the best part of the episode. And
yes,
I think they did a really good character for him.
I think they did good casting with him quite a bit. His cloak isn't quite as patchy as it should be, but he's a cool guy.
It's dumb that like his coat is only like colored on the inside instead of this giant patchwork quilt. I mean, it looks better, obviously, but it's still dumb.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, so the whole point of this episode is Matt's slowly going a little crazy. Tom tells them about how the Aes Sedai will kill men who can channel, and it pretty much heavily implies that he thinks that's what's happening to Matt. It's not the knife. Nobody knows about the knife yet, but they just think he's going crazy because he can channel and he's trying to fight it off. And then they both start working for the bartender lady, who she thinks Matt and Rand are together, and Rand makes the only good line in the whole episode that if I wanted a man, I could do better than Matt. And I laughed out loud, and then I was like, wait a second. Is that... Ugh, I just lost my entire train of thought because I got a text message. Right. So she's trying to flirt with them, this later revealed to be a dark friend. She's flirting with them, but her initial way of flirting with them is implying that they're gay. I'm like, this is a weird flirtation strategy.
No, it's called negging. If you've never tried it, you've never lived.
Apparently. But yeah.
So, no, it's like, what are you, gay? And then he has to prove he's not. And then, you know.
We're onto something here.
I'm telling you.
But yeah, they do a good job of that whole scene. Like the last half of that episode where she's trying to get in their heads and hold them there until one of the eyeless ones can get there. And he's trying to stay on his toes. Matt's going slowly crazier. And then Tom has to get them out. That whole ending is pretty good.
It was really good. And they did a nice job with the, like you said, they're kind of trying to keep it vague who the Dragon Reborn might be. So it did a good job with that, because obviously Tom Marilyn is on the fence about Matt being a man who can channel. And then the eyeless ones and the Forsaken, they don't have any idea. They're just kind of running around like, who is it? Where is it going to be? And that was really good. The girl being a dark friend, I thought that was good. And then her getting a knife through the neck was also great.
Right.
It was fun to watch.
And I remember that scene somewhat in the book. I don't remember Tom killing her. I thought I remember Matt or Rand killing her. I remember them being one of their, because this whole episode is fast forwarding the bulk of book one, basically, of them going from town to town trying to get to the White Tower and reunite with everybody. And they do all of that stuff in basically one episode. They fast forward, because at the end of this, Tom goes to fight an eyeless while they run away, right? Mm-hmm. That's the end of this episode?
Yeah. Yes.
So that fast forwards through like months of them traveling together, Tom training them how to kind of be gleeman a little bit so they can, you know, play the flute
and earn stuff, a wage and stuff. Yeah.
They can busk for a living. That's all done in one episode, which, okay, yeah, that's boring TV. Fast forward through it. So I think they did a decent job of that, but they reshuffled it a little bit, and I can't remember exactly how it happened in the book.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that they probably could have. I think they probably could have done it a little more interestingly. You know, just I think that this would have been a good opportunity to show the world in its entirety by having them kind of just travel through different cities, and you can do that through like the flash forward, almost like a training montage, but like a travel montage. And I think that those can be much more interesting than, oh, Matt is hanging out in the city bartending while Rand is chopping wood.
Yeah. And you could have done
it back to him chopping wood.
You could have showed them have a relationship with Tom that lasts for a while instead of a throwaway line in the next episode where he's like, we've been on the road for a month or months. You should have shown the travel and maybe even done, because I remember it being a point in the book is they were kind of followed by dark friends from town to town and news traveled faster than them, and then they got ambushed by one when they let their guard down. You could have shown a little bit of that by just like the same face watching them in multiple cities during a montage, and then had that whole scene with the girl again, and it would have been fine. But instead, yeah, it was all put in one little mining town in one place. It makes the world feel smaller, and that's not something the Wheel of Time is.
At all, yeah. Not even
but
a little
then,
bit.
But then, let's see. I'm looking at the episode description to see if there's anything else happened I missed. So there's now three different groups of characters we're following. There's Egwene and Perrin, who are with the Tuatha'an, the gypsy people. There's Matt and Rand, who were briefly with Tom, but now are traveling on their own. And then there's Lan, Moraine, and Nynaeve. And Lan convinces Moraine to heal Nynaeve, even though she hates Aes Sedai. But she uses herbs and stuff, and maybe doesn't realize she's using the One Power to heal her. And then they all meet up with the rest of the Aes Sedai that have captured Loghain, the false dragon, which sets up the very not in the books story, but amazing episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's weird that the first 3 episodes lead you up to the first really good episode in the series that is basically entirely a scene absent from the books. Like, it happens, yeah, but it's not touched on really.
Yeah, this, I agree with you. This first book is just really hard to translate to the screen. And I almost wonder if that's because when he was writing these, there weren't many TV shows based off of books. And so, you know, nowadays I think a lot of authors write with kind of the thought in the back of their head of, ooh, what if this gets picked up as a TV show? And so there are a lot of scenes that work for that.
You have to think about the visuals a little bit more, and maybe even mm-hmm. The pacing of a TV version of events a little bit more.
Yeah. And I think what were you saying?
I'm going to pause for just a second because Dylan just got here and the dogs might interrupt.
Gotcha.
Hi. Want to stick them outside real fast? That's the weirdest flavor of coffee. Hi, dog. Hi, other dog. Can you stick them out real fast? They brought me coffee. As one should always do. If you show up at someone's house without coffee, you should just get kicked out. You still there?
Yep.
Okay. All right. So we've went through the first 3 episodes. We didn't have a lot of nice things to say about it, but we did talk about things they changed that we liked, and we talked about how we liked the casting and that kind of stuff. Is there any other, in the next these two episodes we just talked about, changes from the books that you liked or were very angry about? Hello? Did it
break again? Sorry. No. It's fine. You were doing a recap of what you and I were just talking about, so I thought you had brought Dylan in on that and you were asking him.
Gotcha. No, sorry. I was asking books point of view still. He's outside with the dogs. Is there any big changes from the books that you appreciated in these last 2 episodes?
Big changes from the episodes or from the books. Okay. I really hated that they didn't spend any time with the wolf man who teaches Perrin how to do some stuff. But I did like that they introduced the Tuatha'an people.
Tuatha'an.
Because I think those are usually, I think those are cool characters, and I like that. So I'm glad that they spent a little bit of time with them. What else? I think it's probably a good choice to skip the entire time of Rand and Matt in the capital city and just get them straight to Tar Valon.
Right. And we didn't...
I don't necessarily like it, but I do think it's a good choice.
Yeah, that's a big change that I didn't realize they had done until episode 4, is there is an entire kind of pivotal scene where... Instead of in the show, and this is kind of spoiler for next episode, in the show, we meet Loghain in an Aes Sedai encampment on their way to Tar Valon. And then we get to Tar Valon. I'm going to pronounce it each way just to annoy people. When we get there, that's when Matt and Rand see them and all that stuff. And in the books, it all takes place in Camelon, one of the main capital cities. And you also meet a bunch of characters that will be important several books down the road. And they just skipped that, which makes sense. You don't have to cast these people a season before they're important. You don't have to build a massive, huge set, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Makes sense, but it does feel a little weird that we haven't gone to Camelon.
Yeah. And I know that me saying all that did skip forward to the next episode, but it's kind of a big part of episode 3 because that,
it would have happened in episode 3 if they were doing it, because episode 4 just starts off past it. So it's not really a spoiler. Yes. Yeah.
Right. So all I thought that was good. It just streamlined it.
I'm going to introduce someone who has not read the books and he liked the first 3 episodes or most of them. We're going to get his opinion. This is Dylan Bales. If he can hear me. Why don't you close the door, and I'm going to unplug the audio, so the audio might change a little bit, but we're going to have Dylan just give some of his opinions on it. All right, so Dylan, welcome.
Hello there.
So we just finished going over the first 3 episodes entirely. You haven't read any of the books. What are your thoughts, being a Wheel of Time virgin, on the first 3 episodes?
I mean, I thought they were pretty interesting. It's pretty fun so far. I really liked the visual effects in the series. The first episode was really fun. I liked Maureen's fighting style. It was really cool to see her fight all those Trollocs on the first episode.
Okay, pause for just a second, because we ripped the first episode's visual effects to shreds in our first episode. You've seen what episode? You've seen up to episode 5 right now, right?
No,
just 4? Okay. You remember the visual effects in episode 4 and compare them to episode 1? You do agree that 4 was better, right?
Yes.
Okay. We're just making sure you're not completely crazy.
I still think it was great, though, watching her tear apart that building and toss it at the Trollocs. I think it was really awesome to watch. And she, you know, I thought it was pretty fun.
This is just funny because we had the exact opposite opinion. And Steven is apparently offline now. Something happened. Sit back down and we'll just keep talking. Maybe he'll pop back up in a second. I don't know what just happened. Okay, so story-wise, what did you think so far in the story? Is there any plot questions you have or problems you have with the first several episodes?
The only issue I had was right at the very beginning of the first episode, there was like a weird bit of dialogue that was very confusing because they said so many words all at the same time that it didn't really make any sense to me. I do remember now, after rewatching the first episode, it was something about the Aes Sedai and the dragon and darkness chaining it.
Okay.
Anyway, so there were a lot of words that she used that I'd never heard before, so I didn't know what she was even saying, and it just seemed like they expect you to understand kind of what she was saying, but I had no idea what it was. So
utterly pointless bit of exposition at the beginning, a massively forgettable scene. Even people who haven't read the books agree that it was utterly pointless. Don't do that, Amazon. All right. Steven is still gone. It just says he's offline. We've had the weirdest technical issues. Okay, do you have any, this is weird not having his voice too, ask you questions and prompts. Do you have any expectations or predictions of what's happening next? You've just finished episode 4. We're talking about the first 3, but do you have any predictions going forward of big things that happen or something you're looking forward to happening?
I mean, not really. It's kind of hard for me to expect what's to come. I mean, I do kind of understand, I can't remember what his name is, the guy who picked up the dagger in that city with all the darkness and stuff. I think he's a pretty interesting character. I'm kind of expecting something to happen with him. I don't know if he's going to turn evil or what, but almost seems like a generic, like, supervillain origin story or something like that. Almost picking up some evil dagger and then becoming superpowered, but also evil or something.
Well, he's not necessarily evil. He just can sense evil, at least, because he was pointing to the eyeless gray man. Gray mans are different things. Sorry. Okay, so Steven says in text message that he says he's online still. I'm asking him if he has any questions he wants for Dylan, and then Dylan will let you go, and I'll try to close this off. Don't understand why the computer is refusing to work with us. In the meantime, we will have a different guest next episode, someone who has also read all of the books, so he knows the ending, unlike me. Okay, here's Steven's question for you, Dylan. He wants to know, is it rave-worthy?
basically, will people be talking about this with their coworkers? Will it be a, you know, water cooler conversation like Game of Thrones was? Is this going to be huge, or is this just kind of a show? What do you think?
I mean, I never watched Game of Thrones myself. I purposely don't watch a lot of series because I'm worried that they won't finish them. In this specific case, they finished it in a terrible way. So, I mean, I was happy I didn't watch Game of Thrones. But when it comes to Wheel of Time, I mean, I guess it really just kind of depends on where they go with the series, especially with the whole first season, kind of seeing where they end it and how the pacing of the story works. Like right now, I'm really thinking it could be something big, but and I know it's already been renewed for another season, but I don't know how it'll end up being in the long run. Game of Thrones, I don't know how it was at the start either. Like okay. I said, since I never That's watched fair. It, but
well, Game of Thrones had this. It had one of the best opening episodes of any show ever, and it was immediately a cultural phenomenon. This show, you don't think is going to have that staying power unless it closes out season one really good, basically.
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, I think it's been a great series so far. I think it'll be entertaining to continue watching. I don't know if it'll be that big necessarily.
Okay.
But it's hard to tell with a streaming series. I don't know if they even released their numbers. So.
Yeah, that's true. Well, thank you for joining us and giving us a non-reader perspective. We might have you on again on the last episode of the season, or maybe the recap of what you thought of the whole first season, having not read the books. But for now, thank you for joining us. Again, sorry, listeners, that this sucks and Steven's just gone. But remember to like, share, and subscribe. You can find us at Twitter at BookReportPod. And we'll see you next week when we talk about episode 4 with our new guest. Thanks.